Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our subject today, parenting the special needs kids. Our sponsor, Pat and Marie Kelly, members of St. Henry's Church in Franklin. Our guest expert is Sherry Baylor. I'll tell you more about her in a moment, but first my monologue. Every kid is special, but there are kids who need extra help because of medical, physical, emotional, or learning problems. Many of these kids also need medicine, therapy, or extra help in school, stuff other kids don't need. We call them special needs children. ADHD, ADD, and learning disabilities, autisms, and a host of other conditions may require kids to take medicines at home and in school. Those with cerebral palsy often need to use a wheelchair or crutches as well as take medicines. Despite these difficulties, with the help of parents, community, and schools, almost two-thirds, 65%, of these kids graduate with a regular high school diploma. Unfortunately, special needs kids are often subject to bullying or are laughed at by their peers. It is one of our jobs as parents to remind our own kids that these children need help, not ridicule, respect, not dissing, and advocates, not adversaries. According to the Individuals with Disability Education Act, there are 13 categories of special ed, including hearing difficulties, visual disability, emotional disability, intellectual disability, orthopedic impairment, and many, many others. We'll let our guest expert tell us about them. But before we do, I want to say a few words about some of which I am more familiar. Then we'll have our guest expert tell us of her experience teaching special needs students, and I know our parents will all learn a lot from her, and so will I. Autism is a heart-breaking neurodevelopment disorder that is characterized by problems with social interaction, verbal and nonverbal communication, and restricted interests and behavior. The cause, unknown, and it seems to be increasing in frequency. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, estimates that one of every 110 children in the United States is affected with the disorder. Boys are more frequently diagnosed than girls. Some years ago, a then well-respected doctor in England faked a study, data and all, and reported that one of the most prestigious medical journals that MMR vaccine is the cause of autism. The data he showed were compelling. However, the CDC and other institutions conducted many studies which called the earlier work into question. They found no connection with MMR or any other immunizations and autism. Later, it was learned that the doctor who originally fabricated the data had been paid by a pharmaceutical company to make up the study and publish it. He has since admitted guilt and has lost his license to practice in the United Kingdom. I'm sure a special guest expert will have more to tell us about autism. However, more than 10% of U.S. children have been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, ADD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's roughly 5.8 million children aged 5 to 17 years. I'm sure all my listeners have met kids with ADD or ADHD. Some may have children of their own who have been diagnosed with it. This diagnosis really puts stress, financial as well as emotional and physical, on families and on schools. I'm inclined to think that many of these kids are overdiagnosed and overtreated. But there is another side of this argument that complains that not enough kids are diagnosed. Too many are undiagnosed and therefore not treated. Every bit of the research tells us that watching TV at a young age and overwatching screens at any age are contributing factors. Likewise, the more kids play outdoors, especially in areas where grass or green trees grow, the less likely they are to have ADD or ADHD. One writer I read a few weeks ago said the ADHD kids really have NDD, nature deprivation syndrome, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. Now, that's obviously an oversimplification, but playing in green areas does help reduce symptoms as well as incidents. Heredity is also a factor. It is my personal belief that ADD and ADHD are overdiagnosed and too often treated with medications before looking at the real cause, because both diagnoses affect the entire family. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends the first line of treatment should be family counseling, family therapy. I'm not saying that no kids should be given Ritalin, Concerta, or amphetamines, but to give kids these upper pills to our growing children seems to me a treatment worse than the disease. Helping the family learn how to deal with them and the family's role in the development of ADD and ADHD must come first. Getting these kids away from screen watching and getting them playing outdoors is a far better treatment, much less risky, less costly, than these medicines. Now let me introduce our guest expert and pick her brain for a while. Sherry Baylor has taught in the Williamson County School District in Bel Air, Maryland, and in 7 years as a resident facility for emotionally disturbed children in Louisiana. She did her undergraduate work at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and received a master's from Johns Hopkins University. She completed postgraduate work at the University of Delaware and at Southeast Louisiana University. Twice she was chosen as Teacher of the Year in two different Williamson County schools. She and her husband have two grown children and two grandkids. Best of all, Sherry is a good friend of mine. Welcome, Sherry, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me today.
It's going to be a real pleasure and a really learning experience. Sherry, special ed teachers have always held a really high place in my mind, mostly because I'm so impressed that you and your peers take on this major task, and those of you I talk with love it. Thanks for coming on the show, and especially for what you have done for these special kids over the years.
Thank you so much.
Why don't you tell us first how you became interested in special ed and what you have enjoyed most about it?
Many years ago, my then boyfriend and now husband had a younger brother. He had a significant learning disability and struggled in elementary and middle school. He was one of five kids, so it was a challenging time for him. He was the youngest child. His parents decided to send him to a private school in Florida, which was challenging financially and emotionally for the whole family. They felt that it was his best option to be successful. I was drawn to their plight, to find that appropriate education for their child, and I then grew to love that family, and as I married into that family, kind of grew up with this young man and watching him thrive.
And how did he do?
He did very well. He is living independently. He's married. He has a child.
Oh, good.
Still working. Did not go to college, but absolutely was successful in whatever he did.
Not everyone has to go to college, obviously.
Correct.
Sherry, I hear things about accommodated and modified curricula. What are those? What's the difference?
That's a great question, because it's often challenging for parents to understand the differences. An accommodated curriculum is meant to level the playing field for their child. An accommodation is how the child learns the material, but not what they learn. So what you do is, if a child has a processing difficulty or a child has ADD and is hard to focus in a classroom, you would give an accommodation. You might give audiobooks for that child instead of having him read the book independently. You might test him in small group or bring him out and review the material to ensure that that material has been imprinted. You might do oral testing, allow extra time. For a child with a writing difficulty, we might provide a fill-in-the-blank form so that they don't have to write everything that the teacher is telling them, that they focus in on certain words.
Hmm. And what is modified?
Modified curriculum is very different. Modified changes the way the child or the student is expected to learn. And it more or less affects them down the road when they graduate because the material is changed. You might have a child that's performing three grade levels below their peers. So you modify that curriculum to meet their academic level. You might change an essay that the teacher has given them to creating a poster instead. You focus on learning key concepts. Alternative assessments are also given to students who are more intellectually challenged so that they can be successful on their ability level.
How are our schools in Williamson County, for example, prepared for these kind of problems?
Williamson County is very innovative. They are very well prepared to handle students with specific disabilities. They have very strict guidelines that we follow. Children come into the system and are identified. There's a long process that is set forth before they are deemed to need more specialized services. We've had people from other states read about our county and come into our county, especially parents with children with autism. We provide a lot of services for those students.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, how often do you bring the parents in? How do you deal with them? Do you have any kind of organization for them?
Yes, there's a process that goes through that is developed for each parent, especially if it's a child that is coming into the special ed services program. We develop what's called an individualized educational program for that child. But before that IEP, as it's called, is developed, it's a long process that we collect data, parental information, teacher input. We collect data for a period of time to ensure that there is a noticeable change in that academic need for that child. The data is then brought to a school psychologist who reviews the data. She then will, if it is determined that that child needs more testing done or needs testing done in order to qualify, then she will do educational testing to see if it matches the concerns that the teacher and parent are seeing. If that happens and it is determined that the child needs an individualized educational plan, then an IEP meeting is held. And it's a team approach with teachers that work with that child, special ed teacher, school psychologist, parents. If parents feel that other people are needed to come into that, whether it be an advocate or whether it be someone that can offer more information regarding their child's needs, then that person is also included.
You know, I'm impressed that the school is able to either accommodate them through changes in method or modify it. Shouldn't parents be taught to do those same things?
I see the parents in the system that I've worked in work very hard to provide their child the best education possible. They have asked for more specific information on a nightly basis to allow them to better assist their child for work. I provided daily logs for my students that listed every single grade, every single class that they had. And in that, I listed homework, I listed concerns, I listed the things that they did well, and that was a basis for a daily report for those parents. I then asked those parents to give some type of reflection on what they saw that day, what was too challenging for their child at home to do independently, could the child do it independently, and then they signed that and it was returned the next day.
Sounds like it's a lot of work. I mean, really?
It is a lot of work, especially when you're providing individualized educational plans for each student, because every student is different, and every student's needs are different.
Yep. What can you tell us about Asperger's syndrome?
Asperger's is part of the autism spectrum. It was dropped from the diagnosis and statistical manual of mental disorders several years ago. However, it's kind of used to characterize those students that are under the autism spectrum but are higher, that perform at a higher level. Mm-hmm. It's characterized by students who struggle with socialization and communication. They see things very black and white. They can be compulsive. They may respond in repetitive verbal words or actions. They can be impulsive. They require some guidance socially, and this disorder can isolate them at times. They usually have an intense interest in some one period of time, or it could be certain airplanes or trains, but they perform higher than academically than students who are diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. However, it is under that spectrum.
Good. Well, we mentioned a few of the different kinds of special needs that kids may have. You want to talk about some of the other ones?
Well, there's other health impaired, which is usually what you see with a child with ADD or ADHD, autism. You have children who are deaf, blind. You have multiple disabilities. You have emotionally disturbed, intellectually disabled, orthopedic impairments, significant learning disabilities, speech and language, and traumatic brain injuries. All those are encompassed in our groups of students that we work with.
Now, do you have these kids all in one group? To me, it seems like such a wide spectrum of disorders to work with.
It depends on the child's ability level, and it depends on how they are grouped within what we call an inclusion classroom. So if they're in an inclusion grouping, then they're in four different classrooms, and we provide services within those classrooms, which is language arts and reading, math, social studies, and science. Especially if there's a reading disability that affects them, then there's extra support in social studies and science.
Why don't you tell us about a typical day when you were at Williams County School?
A typical day. I would say that there's no typical day in special ed, because there are days that you're on triage. A child may come in that's had a rough night and didn't sleep at all. So he may come in highly engaged and highly anxious. So if you notice that child as he walks off the bus, you think to yourself, we're going to do highly preferred activities to get him engaged within the school setting. Many schools in Williamson County have what we call paraprofessionals, who are an amazing group of individuals that assist the teacher within the classroom setting and outside of the classroom setting. You have students that may have one paraprofessional that's assigned to them. So if that paraprofessional has to be absent that day, you have to ensure that that child is getting their academic, social, and emotional needs met. So you might have 3 to 4 schedules worked into the day that you can transfer people around. If a child comes in anxious, you're very calm. You deflect and distract. If a child comes in that's defensive, you are very direct with that child, and you may give him an option. First you do this, then we do that. They may have choice boards that they use. If a child comes in that is on the verge of being a danger to himself or a danger to others, we have seclusion rooms that we could utilize to be able to calm him down. Or we, knowing the child, would utilize those strategies of deflecting and distracting to get him calm. usually special ed teachers work throughout the day because there's always some small fire that they have to pull out.
I would think so.
And put out. And there are... They're always being pulled from one direction to the other. You also have to provide services for those students in their related arts time. So there, you ensure that a child that's we call an eloper, a child that may run if he gets frustrated or angry, that there are barriers set up at doors, whether it be a person or somehow that child is protected in PE. Or if a child has a lot of sensory issues and he's in an art class, that you have someone nearby to ensure that he doesn't feel the need to pour out all the paint and have that sensory integration mm-hmm. with the tactile senses.
Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds to me like an incredibly difficult job.
It's a very, very rewarding job.
I was going to ask, what do you like best about it? What were some of the things that kept you going?
I've taught for 34 years. Mm-hmm. The children are amazing. They are enlightening. They are kind. And they are so grateful at times when you're there as someone that protects and watches them to ensure that they get what they need throughout the day. Mm-hmm. The children are fabulous. They're fabulous.
Kids are great, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Sherry, do the local pediatricians and doctors ever get involved in any of the things you do?
We do include the child's doctor if there are medical concerns, especially if there's been a change in medication. We can do conference calls with a parent and that doctor in order to review what we see as changes, as they work toward tweaking medications throughout the day. So yes, parents have also asked certain doctors to come in and sit in the IEP meetings, which we absolutely are fine with.
You think it's a good idea?
Yes, the more information, the better.
When I was in practice, I used to go to some, when I started practicing, they didn't have the special ed. And as they brought it in, it was fun to see it evolve and what happened to the kids involved in it. And I think it was a wonderful asset to our education system.
Williamson County is an inclusion county, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But it is absolutely something that we encourage and see. We don't want isolation. We want less restrictive environments instead of more restrictive environments.
Kids in regular classrooms with regular kids.
Correct.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We talked about inclusion classrooms. In Williamson County, years ago, it was determined that we would integrate children with disabilities into the mainstream classes to learn alongside non-disabled same-age peers. It was felt that the children with disabilities would thrive and be better participants within the classroom setting rather than being put in a self-contained classroom or a classroom which was called a learning lab. What we try to do is provide the least restrictive environment for every child, especially children as they grow older. They sense that there is a difference in their academic learning, and they want to be the same as their peers. So we try to be very transparent in that we help every child and not just focus on those students that have an IEP. Special ed teachers and general ed teachers do collaborative learning. We call that co-teaching. So it's looked at as two teachers within a classroom helping the entire class.
Don't you think that the non-special need kids profit an awful lot from that, too?
Well, we've developed best buddy programs. We've developed lunch buddies. We've been able to pair students together so that there is more actual integration and learning and social interactions that develop. It makes learning, makes their differences appear less different. Mm-hmm. And we support all students, creates higher level expectations for all students, not just the students that we work with an IEP.
Good. Sherry, unbelievable as it sounds, we've run out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't it? It's time to wrap it up. It's been a great pleasure talking with you, Sherry. There's so much out there, and so much for the people to do who are involved in it. I really appreciate it. And thank you for listening to our listeners. And you're listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Now, before I sign off, one quick story. Some years ago, I saw a four-year-old boy a couple of times who had extreme ADHD, combative type. He was on medication by another doctor when I first saw him. And he came in one day with his dad and his grandma. And I said, "Dad, how's it going?" He said, "Well, nothing's changed since we were here last month. He's gotten kicked out of another preschool. And just yesterday, I had to go get him from another school and rescue the school from him being there. He said, "I just don't know what we're going to do with him." We talked a little bit, and then Grandma said, "Could I see you alone, Doctor, just you and me without Dad and the boy?" And I said, "Dad?" And Dad said, "Yeah, go ahead." And so he and the boy left. And Mom said, we live out of town, but we stayed here 2 weeks ago with this kid. And when we were on the house taking care of him, he was a wonderful kid, just wonderful. And the first day we took him to school, he was great. At the school, the teacher says, "What did you guys do to him?" And at the end of the week, the teacher called me and says, "Are you sure this is the same boy? What's happening? What's going on?" Well, what we did, she said, it was got the tension out of the house. The mother was depressed and hostile towards him, just unbelievably. She never gave him any kind of compliments, always ragging on him for something. And I think she was the problem. She said to me, "I would like them to go to family counseling." He said, "Well," first I thought, "Well, sure, your mother-in-law, what do you expect to say about that daughter?" You know what I mean? And but she was serious, and she was right. And the family went to family counseling for a few sessions, and the things just turned around just like that. And the boy's graduated from college this year, and he's doing very good, going to graduate school. It's a wonderful, wonderful family. But you got to work at the problem, which sometimes isn't the kid. One guy told me that when people bring a crazy kid in to see you, it's usually he's the only one sane in the family. So that was the message I got, is never write off a kid, never write one off. Now for your homework. If you have a kid with ADD or ADHD or any other kind of a special learning problem, or if you don't, but you know somebody who has, get your family together and go to my website, www.parenting-matters.com. Click on audio blog and listen to this show again. Then let us know how the program was helpful to you. And tell us one piece of advice you have for these kids' parents. And if you have a subject you would like us to discuss, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thank you for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.